Who are you?
Tim Callender.
Summer Brooks.
Brett Filipek.
We host the Babylon podcast.
What do you want?
To study and discuss the Babylon 5 universe.
Where are you going?
To discover every scrap of B5 memorabilia.
Who do you serve, and who do you trust?
Welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I'm Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
And we have no Brett.
We have no Brett. Yes, we have no Brett Filipek. We have no Brett Filipek today. Okay, never mind. We have, however, an announcement that we want to pass on.
Yes.
Starting today, if you go to www.b5pat.com, that's B5PAT, you will be able to purchase Pleasure Thresholds, Patricia Tallman's Babylon 5 scrapbook. Here I will read the press release for this. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrific compliment to the JMS Babylon 5 scriptbook series. This behind-the-scenes peek into an actor's life during the B5 years is a very personal, honest, and occasionally spicy memoir. Make no mistake, this book is not for kids. There are a ton of Pat's personal, never-before-seen photos, which give the readers a chance to look into her life and the B5 experience through her eyes. Pat's unique perspective covers her work on the Paramount lot on all three Star Trek shows, as well as the first feature for the Next Generation crew. She also shares details about her years as a stunt woman on TV and film while working on Babylon 5, and tells how that affected her work as an actress. Also included in this entertaining book are copies of actual call sheets, contracts, salary negotiations, communications, and notes. It also, and this is something that JMS had put on his Facebook page, I think this is the first time anyone from the cast has done a book like this, certainly the first this thorough from her point of view. It's also signed by she and me, since I did an intro to the book. That's JMS writing this. And there are going to be some big surprise features as well. It goes on sale now. It's autographed by Pat, autographed by JMS. It also includes a DVD with 9 videos and 2 audio features. And a quote postcard. So I went over to the website. It's got, you know what, you got to go over there because you will see just even in some of the accoutrements there, some very interesting photographs. And yes, this is not for children. Anyway, so there you are.
You'd think the title Pleasure Thresholds would kind of be a hint that it is probably rated PG, maybe rated R.
Yeah, PG-13 at least.
Possibly.
Yeah, there's a content warning here on the website. It says, language and situations described in this book make it suitable for adults only.
There you go.
There you are.
Now, see, here's what you do. I think a boat was missed here. Since it has media content, by not stamping the parental advisory black and white sticker on it,
yes, they may be in trouble there.
Well, no. They should have done that in order to guarantee that people would buy it. You know, because that's the flag. That, you know, you wave the flag and it goes, ooh, there's something racy in there. I want to check it out. For no other reason. No interest, specific interest in the content. Just like, ooh, there are people in charge who have their knickers in a bunch because of what's on here. Right. I think I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think they don't have to worry about that. I think doing that appeals to an audience wider than those who are really interested in what Pat has to say. There's also some excerpts from her videos on the website where she talks about Richard Biggs and talks about the black contacts. I haven't listened or watched either, but there they are. So you get a You'll get a preview of that. And looking at the website here, to clarify, you click to pre-order now. The book will be released on Wednesday, September 21st. Pre-orders will ship first. You will not be charged until your order ships. So there you go, guys.
Now, they said that this is the multimedia version is limited, so that means when they run out of CDs, they're done?
I'm not sure. That's not... kind of what I'm reading here is that it's only discounted right now for the first time through September 27th and will never be discounted again. I don't see anything here that says that it's a limited edition.
There was something I read it when I read the link when Neil first sent it to me, and there was something on there about the multimedia version being limited. And I don't want to fire up my web browser right now because it will cause my internet connection to crap the bed.
I understand that. I am looking right now trying to see if it says something about that. Because, like I said, I looked through it and I didn't see anything that suggests that. No, basically, it's just basically saying that the... they're charging the money they're charging for it because it is a multimedia experience. And there's also uncensored commentary on Secrets of the Soul.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there you go, guys. This looks to be pretty fat and juicy. And
as in something you would pop in a CD player or an MP3 player and listen to while watching Secrets of the Soul?
This seems to be the implication of that, yes.
Ooh, a bonus secret commentary track. Right. That's cool.
Right. And then there's a final message from Pat. It says, I hope you will receive this book how it is intended, a loving and deeply personal gift to you, the fans of Babylon 5. Yeah, I don't see anything that says it's a limited edition. It's just that it will never be discounted after the 27th.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get some definite clarification on that from Jason or Jacqueline later on.
Yeah, right.
Who knows?
Exactly. Anyway. So there you go.
So I'm led to believe that Gary was slacking this week.
Oh, I've got a message here from the Jason Davis. The CD-ROM is not limited. So there you go, guys.
Okay. There you go.
Thank you, Jason.
So, yeah, what was it? Gary slacked off, so Neil filled in admirably by overloading the mailbox.
Right. Yes, so let's take a quick break and get on with the feedback-a-palooza.
Two million tons of spinning metal, all alone in the night. A world where empires rise and fall. Where dreams are born and die. Where war and hatred are challenged by love and faith. In the third age of mankind, an age plagued by an evil empire that seeks to destroy humanity, it is our last, best hope for peace, for victory, for freedom. It is Babylon 5.
Do I have to put an explicit tag on this show now?
My God, you guys are easy.
Come on.
We know him so well, and yet we did not see that coming.
What the hell show is this?
It's the Babylon Podcast, only on Farpoint Media.
And we're back with more Babylon Podcast, the Feedback-a-Palooza Overload Edition.
Actually, it's the Neil Overload Edition, but that's okay.
Oh, so this is a Neil-a-palooza?
It's pretty much a Neil-a-palooza.
Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 245. We're going over the JMS Twitter conference, and Tim is getting more and more frustrated with JMS's answers about Babylon 5 projects. And it just seems quite interesting, some of those responses. now that we know what it is that he couldn't say at the time, he was, you know, quite good self-control there, keeping all that information back as they were trying to work out this deal that didn't happen. Anyway, just wanted to note that. That's all.
Yeah.
One of these days, one of these ways.
All right, roll the next one.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 245 in the tweet conference. And I just can't believe that question that somebody had about possibly skipping over the last half of season two in order to rush to season three. Because he'd be missing a whole bunch of exciting developments there, and probably, you know, we don't understand a lot of it. So whoever this person was, if he's listening to the podcast, he really needs to keep on going through there, because there's some great things ahead there at the end of season two. And he would be very upset to have missed those. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, you miss the fall of night, and you miss the long twilight struggle, and you miss acts of sacrifice. You miss boom shabba laba laba boom shabba laba laba hey.
And that is a crime.
Exactly. That's right. So that's a crazy person who is saying that stuff. You know what that is? Summer, that's a person who wants to get to the Big Bang without having to go through the compressed state that gets you there.
But the thing is when you get to the Big Bang, if you haven't gone through all those earlier episodes, you're not as invested in the characters. The Big Bang, it doesn't impact you as much. It doesn't make you go, oh, you're gotta be kidding me. It's like if you had skipped over most of season one,
yeah,
would you really have cared as much when, spoiler alert, Garibaldi got shot in the back?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
No, it comes as a total shock because of, A, when it happens, because you're so used to the good guys win and save the day, but no, Garibaldi gets thwarted by his own right-hand man, and we spend the first couple episodes of season two going, he's right there, and nobody knows it.
Yeah,
and it just makes it fun.
Yeah, and beyond that, season two, so much stuff builds to the following seasons that I don't know that it makes a whole lot of sense without seeing some of that stuff.
You guys are gonna, I have to rearrange my plates now, don't I? I really, really have to work up my cheat sheet viewing order for the impatient, don't I?
Yes.
Because we already have the list of the Wham episodes from the Lurker's Guide. Right. But there are some other episodes in there that aren't Wham episodes that have little clues in them. So we need a Babylon 5 Impatient Viewer's Guide.
Well, it's Neil from Bowie. I listened to the beginning of show 246 talk about the U.S. being inspired if China planted a bigger flag on the moon or something, and just have to think about the Firefly universe where China did do the big expansion out there. So who knows whether Joss Whedon's future is going to be more likely or not. That's all.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, we don't want the boring Chinese getting there first now, do we?
Well, the actual, I forget who said it, but the actual statement was the United States government's interest in space travel is inversely proportional to how close the Chinese get to the moon.
That could be.
Once somebody else starts launching manned missions to the moon, or even yet, it's like, you know, hey, done the moon, been there, done that. We've got five volunteers who are going to Mars first. Can you imagine what an OMG that would be? Launching a rocket, manned rocket, headed for Mars. They know it could be a one-way trip, and they don't care. They just want to get there first.
Yeah, well, the question is, would we rush to put something together like that?
You're kidding, right? No, they're not going to rush anything.
No.
I see two scenarios here. They're either going to pay to hitch a ride or do something callous like sabotage it.
No, they wouldn't do that. This is what I think. Yeah, you are horribly cynical. Here's the thing. I think even with a society like the Chinese society, where the government is fairly closed in on itself, putting together a manned mission to Mars is not something that you do very easily in secret. And I think what would probably happen is we would announce plans, but then actually start getting stuff done, which would, you know, raise all sorts of questions there. And then, you know, somebody would spill the beans. Hey, well, you know, the Chinese are going.
The thing is, like, nobody falls for that anymore, because we've had years and years and years of corporations announcing products that never arrive. So nobody even pays attention to the announcements anymore.
We need to get Apple to build one.
There you go. Because we're looking at you, Microsoft, lying to us all those years. No, seriously, I don't know what would happen. I really don't. Because there's money to be made in space travel. Or for creating innovations and advances in space travel. Let me rephrase that. And I don't know who's going to get there first.
Well, I mean, if you really want to explore this, I think if I'm not even sure how to articulate it. I like the idea that at this stage of the game, where we are right now, that government becomes a force for providing impetus to private companies to start doing investment, not only in space travel, but just, you know, launch satellites, the whole nine yards. I think that's a good thing. Let NASA continue to do the basic research, to do the things like build the interplanetary probes, like New Horizons heading out to Pluto right now, like Cassini, which was an international joint effort. You know, I see is where the value is in government involvement in space exploration at this point in time.
But who funds that research?
Because... Well, we do. That's the thing. I mean, that's IO9 just had a really great piece today about public science works, and I highly recommend everybody go read that, because it's very interesting. But we do, but that's part of it. That basic research is something that your tax dollars go to, and so forth, so on. But what I think happens is things like private investment and private enterprise building launch vehicles, pushing through the space tourism, which doesn't seem to quite get where, you know, the promise of Spaceship One seems to have faded on the horizon a bit. But the point is, those things make jobs, those things create jobs, those things create tax dollars, and those things help to ideally fund further basic interplanetary research that NASA and JPL do. And yes, I am being Edith Keeler right now, and don't hit me with a truck.
I just see more opportunity for private sector to fund that research than the government. That's just me.
Yeah, but there's no money in that kind of research. There's no money for business to send a probe to Pluto.
Which is why the government's not giving them the money either. Anyway.
All right, well, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. Check out our space exploration podcast.
Right.
Starting up in 2015.
As soon as we get government funding.
All right, next voicemail.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to the beginning of the Tucker Smallwood interview, which is a great interview there. And one thing that piqued my interest early on was that he decided to take a look at his character in Babylon 5, and he added the accent there so that he wouldn't look so contemporary. So that was a nice touch that you know, the actor brought to it, and it you know, brought to mind Harlan Ellison's notes that you can see in the limited edition of Brain movies. So anyway, very nice. That's all.
You know, I thought that was interesting too, because one of the things that Tucker reveals is how much input and influence an actor can have on a one-shot character. Because seriously, I mean, really, part of what makes Mr. Ndawe so endearing is that accent. And I was only half joking when, you know, talking about the scene with him and Londo in the Battle of the Accents there. But it does become memorable. He's not just a guy who's on the spot to fulfill a particular point of the plot. You get the sense that, and like Tucker said, just with the accent, you get the sense that there's so much more there to that character.
Yeah, and you realize that he's on he was sent on the mission because he had a very diplomatic. He was a diplomat,
right?
First and foremost, and there's a bureaucratic nature to him, but also an investigative nature, and he's a careful listener, and that I don't know, it makes you want to listen to him more.
Yeah,
just the air he presented when he was talking to different people,
and the accent also takes it out of our. Let's face it, we are, for the most part, American viewers, to widen the circle a bit more, English-speaking viewers. And this accent speaks to a different nationality, which makes the universe that much bigger. So there you are.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie calling in, listening to this beginning of the show, 247, about the person who had on some website had complaints about JMS's success with comic books. He's definitely correct with the Superman and Wonder Woman that JMS had to left. For some reason, and somebody else carried on based on his outlines there. With Rising Stars, I didn't get around to finishing it, but I think the point there, I think JMS actually did write the whole of the main series of Rising Stars, but as it went on towards the end, it was the comics were coming out later and later. So to the best of my knowledge. So that's the complaint there, was that JMS was getting, or perhaps the artists, or the combination thereof, were getting behind in their schedule. I know there were some spin-off series from Rising Stars, which I believe Fiona Avery wrote. But the main series, as far as I can remember, was completed and was just JMS.
Yeah, I hope that is the case, that it's complete, because a couple years ago at a convention, I saw a graphic novel that I didn't know existed, and it was a Rising Stars compendium, and I swear to you, the thing is as thick as my index finger is long, from knuckle to nail. It's a huge book.
Right.
It's heavy. It could shoot through schools.
I read some of the Rising Stars, but not a lot.
And here's the funny thing. A lot of people liked, what was it, Powers? Is that the one? No, Midnight Nation. Midnight Nation. People liked Midnight Nation more than Rising Stars. And there's like a faction. Like some people, I liked Rising Stars more than Midnight Nation. A whole lot more. A whole lot more. I don't know why. I just thought it was cool. But yeah, if they didn't squeeze everything into that particularly large collection, I would be very disappointed, because that kind of goes against what a compendium means.
You know? Yeah, right.
Like, this is everything. This is my boomstick. No. It's a compendium. It should be everything. So if there's more, I'm going to be disappointed.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 248, the beginning where the discussion about the possible reboot that JMS was offered. And Tim asked the question of what was in it for a Joe, and my take on that is that, you know, he would have complete control, and he would have a good budget to do the job, and he'd probably take it as a good creative challenge to telling the Babylon 5 story in a different way, in a slightly different setting, with the chess pieces shifted around a bit. So you'd be telling something, you know, something parallel to what we saw, but still quite different, and with enough challenge to him to make it interesting for him and make it interesting for all the viewers. So that was my take of that, and I also am taking away from this whole situation that it doesn't look like Warner Brothers is going to want to do a spin-off of the existing Babylon 5 universe, or resume Crusade, or do something like along those lines. That if they do Babylon 5, it's going to be basically with a fresh start from JMS. And that might be what we have to accept if we are going to get any more Babylon 5 show on television or in the movies, that it's going to be a fresh start. Anyway, that's it.
Well, you know, that's what I've, you know, what Neil says about if JMS did this or were to do it, approaching the same story just from a different angle. You know, maybe you do it from the point of view of the Rangers. Maybe you do it. It might be intriguing for a little while to do a Mac and Bo kind of situation where you're following two guys, two schlubs who are always on the periphery of things happening. But that's still, I don't know. There's still something.
I don't want a do-over. I do not want a do-over. I want more stories, the ones we didn't get before, the ones that we thought we were going to get, more Crusade, the Telepath War stuff.
Hell, I'd even settle for a First Shadow War series.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Right, or something to dealing with the first ones, just to if you're going to do prequels, really go for a prequel, right?
At this point, I'm resigned to never, ever get more Babylon 5, and I will just have to be content with writing my own B5 fanfic that no one else in the world will ever see.
Is that the kind of fanfic you type with one hand?
No.
Okay.
Well, listen up, we're going to be listening to show 248 and the point where Tim Summer wondering about Evan Chen's music and, whether JMS just went with the flow or reluctantly or enthusiastically or whatever. And I was just thinking that we've only seen one volume of What the Hell Happened. Maybe Jason can pass on the note, and in one of the subsequent volumes, maybe JMS can address something like that. Or maybe JMS already is planning to address something about the music and some of the choices thereof when discussing the episode. Anyway, just a thought. That's all.
Well, I don't know how much more there is to say about the music. You know, as JMS has said on numerous occasions, a lot of his direction to Christopher Franke pretty much consisted of break our hearts, you know, and then he would deliver at that point. So, yeah, I think that was – I think the music on Babylon 5 – is yet another example of how much of, you know, it's the lightning in a bottle thing. Everybody seemed to be on the right page with that show for the most part. You know, we've heard all the actors talk about how JMS was notorious for not giving direction in what he wanted and telling them, well, if you're doing it wrong, I'll let you know. And I suspect this, the same thing with the music, you know, it was just he trusted the people he had hired to do whatever job it was, and they did it, and there you go.
Yeah. And that literally, that's one of the reasons why, you know, for what, 4 years, I kept trying to get Christopher Franke on here to talk to us about the music.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what's up with that. You know, here, the other thing I would say about the music, that is so amazing about it is thematically, it all stands out, and yet it still varies from episode to episode. And I think that's an incredible feat that I don't know anybody – well, maybe Bear McCreary with the reimagined Battlestar Galactica. But even then, I don't think you had the same strength of themes, of motifs that you had on Babylon 5.
I would beg to differ there. There were, in Battlestar Galactica, the new Battlestar Galactica, there were more easily identifiable themes for characters and situations than there were in B5. But the only sci-fi soundtracks that I've bought recently were Battlestar Galactica. And before that, it was Firefly and Serenity. And before that, it was Babylon 5. So there's a pattern there. Hell, yeah. You know what? I would have bought Jeremiah's soundtrack too if it existed, but it didn't. It didn't exist. Alas, alack.
Wailing and gnashing of teeth.
More like grumbling, because I was able to get the opening theme songs from the DVD, so for season one. There is no Jeremiah season two on DVD. Curse you, MGM. might have helped your cash flow problem if you put a few of those out there, maybe.
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that's enough from Bowie. Listening to the end of show 248 and the frustration in getting Christopher Franke interviewed. And it just occurred to me that I know somebody who worked on the Tangerine Dream box set. And I wonder if he might be able to provide a lead into getting in touch with Christopher Franke. Anyway, if I remember, I might send him a note about that. Anyway, remind me. That's it. Bye.
Hey, Neil, could you, just as a reminder, get in touch with your friend who worked on the Tangerine Dream box set, please? See if he can't go to Christopher Franke for us.
Yes.
That's your reminder.
Yes, yes. See what you can find out. We are... We would be most appreciative. And he can send us an email. I respond to my emails. I do.
Yes, you do.
I really do.
Well, is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 248, where I just got Jason's tweet about 19 years since I started filming. So you just need to remember to keep that date in mind for the big Babylon podcast blowout on the 20th anniversary. So just keep that in mind there, and maybe Tim will be able to complete his song with the 20 years ago today frame. That's all.
Yes, I know. I didn't quite get it because it was the wrong. Yeah. JMS Lonely Hearts Club Band. Anyway, we don't need to. That's no, we don't need me to do that. Not at this time, anyway.
No, no, you can. No, you don't have to do that. No.
Is there not enough Zima in the room that would make me want to do that?
Hey, Badcasters, it's Oracle listening to show 247. Two real quick things. One, one of your callers, I think it was Neil, talked about freeze-framing episodes of Star Trek where Pat Tallman did stunt work. You know, you want to freeze-frame something with Pat Tallman, check out this little movie called Knight Riders. Two words, writers being in plural form. Directed by Roger Corman and features a very young Ed Harris. you guys will know the scene I'm talking about. And secondly, for B5 guest stars that Summer could try the show, I don't know if he's already on the list, and I'm blanking on the actor's name, unfortunately, and I'm not near my computer, so I can't IMDb it. But the guy who played President Clark might be an interesting conversation. Just a thought. Hmm.
All right,
talk to you later. Bye.
Yeah, there's an intriguing.
It is. Hadn't even thought about him, but yeah, the top. I think our top five are John Vickery.
Yep.
Marshall Teague.
Yes.
Marjorie Monaghan.
Yep.
Who else is on that list? I think we have to get Robin back.
Yeah, it would kind of be nice to get a little bit of coherency out of him.
There's somebody else on that list. Okay, those are four of the top five. So
there you go.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Arkel listening to the latest Babylon podcast, and you were talking about how JMS was talking about the negotiations with Warner Brothers for a reboot of Babylon 5. Now, in principle, I'm not in favor of the idea, but then again, I wasn't really in favor of the Battlestar Galactica redo either back when it happened. And, you know, I've been surprised so many times over the years by stuff the studios have done that I really try not to prejudge projects anymore. I mean, hell, the A-Team movie was excellent, and I hated the TV show as a kid, so, you know, go figure. But, you know, if Warner Brothers is still looking to do that, Tim and I came up with a pretty good cast that they could use. I think there's only going to be one more season of Mad Men, so John Hamm would be available to play Sinclair, and Scarlett Johansson would probably be a really tough get to be Lita since he's a big movie star now, but they could always go with my choice, who lost in the voting on that show, with Diane Neal from Law & Order SVU, but, you know, get the thought. And, yeah, and just in case anyone thinks that's just a shameless plug for the casting game, I'm actually canceling the show after the next episode. Podcast just hasn't worked out the way I wanted it to so far. But, so, yeah, it'll probably be done by the time his voicemail gets played on the show, so... But I'm leaving the site up, so if anyone wants to go and check out the Babylon 5 episode that Tim and I did, if they missed it, feel free. castinggame.blogspot.com. That's all the old episodes are going to be there. So talk to you later, Babcasters. Bye.
There you go. Thank you, Arkel. Thanks for the opportunity to do the casting game. I really did enjoy that. And, yeah, I think our cast would be a great cast for a reboot. That's not going to happen. So there we go. So there you go.
Hey, Babcasters, this is Gary, and I'm listening to, I believe it's episode 246.
and you're talking about TNT and how they seem to, you know, find their feet a little bit more, especially giving Falling Skies as an example. And I do still hear TNT bashing, and not that I have glorious things to say about them all the time, but I'd like to point out how good they actually did by Babylon 5 fans. And I'm not talking Crusade, I mean Babylon 5. You know, they picked up this show that had nowhere to go, funded it pretty much to the hilt, at least as far as, you know, TV budgets go. They got movies, we got movies out of them. It prompted some books to be published that might not have otherwise been published because they were staying on for the fifth season. It got us lots of promos and marketing stuff, and even as Jeffrey attested to some time ago, they flooded tons of money into promotion on Babylon 5. They really laid it on heavy and thick, and I can still remember that when it was airing on TNT, how much pimping they did do of the show. So while they turned around and did screw us in Crusade, they did right by Babylon 5, and for that, if nothing else, you should hold back some of your scorn and ridicule, Summer. I'll talk to everybody later. Take care.
My what?
Yes, Summer, your scorn and ridicule.
What? What did I do?
You scorned and ridiculed.
Who?
The TNT.
Well, at the time, they deserved it. They're better now. It's not even the same people in charge.
Yeah, and from what I recall, I think JMS in our interview mentioned that, and I think I've read this as well, is that TNT at the time, in 1998, 1999, TNT West were the ones who convinced the network executives to pick up Babylon 5, and they were really big on the show. It's
yes.
The guys at TNT East who didn't quite understand what the deal was, and unfortunately were calling the shots in the end, and they're the ones that got involved in Crusade. So
Right. The people in Los Angeles understood the show. The people in Atlanta were like,
huh?
Fiction? What is this fiction? I'm really, really convinced that the people who were involved at the beginning with TNT were people who were spun out of CNN and TBS, basically news and sports,
and
they didn't understand regular hourly television drama of any sort. I mean, it wasn't until... what, 2004, 2005, that TNT started to get it right? Yeah, the first show that they actually got right was The Closer. And when was that, 2004?
I don't know.
Anyway, and then after that, they started realizing, hey, if we make good drama, people will watch. What do you know about that?
Yeah.
And I think it was 2005, jeez. Yeah, it's only, this is like the sixth season of The Closer, so, but yeah, they, after that, they started doing stuff right. Before that, they were, let's call it, they were on an unpredetermined learning curve. But yes, the folks in the Atlanta office in 1999-2000 were collectively... I'm not going to say clueless because they knew television. Uninterested in learning about television programming they didn't already know.
Yeah.
Because why else would they ignore what the folks in LA were telling them? I mean, gee, the folks in LA probably had experience with scripted television.
Yeah, well, I think that's they weren't quite sure what they wanted to do, and you know, as has been said before, you know, at that point in time, Babylon 5 was basically presented to them as a done deal. All they had to do was just carve out an hour a week to, or actually 2 hours because they double aired it, but you know, carve out 2 hours a week to show it, and they were really not on the hook for it. Crusade was a whole different animal.
Somebody tell me how in the world wrestling continues to be as popular as it is. I mean, seriously, really? Anyway. Next one.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Father Beast from Seattle, Utah.
Hello.
And on a recent show, I heard Tim talking about how they have people walking around in neckties on Battlestar Galactica. And my first thought was that's another reason that Babylon 5 wins over Battlestar Galactica. Every time I watch Babylon 5 and people see people getting dressed up, I'm so glad that that ties have become a thing of the past. You know, nobody wears ties in the universe of Babylon 5. And none of their shirts have the turned-down collars to support them. It's a little detail about costuming that I've always loved and never really talked about, but it's always there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? And
what?
He's going by wardrobe choice now.
Well, it's a great wardrobe choice. If I was in the future, I wouldn't want to have to ever wear a necktie. Of course, to be perfectly accurate, Battlestar Galactica was set in the distant past, so that kind of explains why they hadn't evolved past the need for neckties.
Hey, the only people who were wearing ties in the BSG universe were the lawyers, okay? Come on.
No, not just the lawyers.
Where did you see ties? Okay, the politicians.
Yeah, right, exactly. Which maybe explains that they were just lack of oxygen to the brain, so... all right, never mind. I got nothing.
Good one.
That is all of the voicemails.
Fantastic.
Really? Well, that went by quick.
Yeah, that did. I do have a couple emails, so if we want to take a break and come back and do the emails, we can do that.
No, let's run it straight through.
Straight through? Okay.
Straight through.
Here we go. Let me see here. Okay. This comes to us from Kate Altman, who was formerly of Chicagoland, but now just north of me in Maryland. So there. Kate writes, "Hi, Babcasters. In my opinion, Dr. Franklin is..." Oh, this is... Okay, first of all, let me preface this. This is about Each Night I Dream of Earth, if I get that right, where Dr. Franklin, where Stephen... Richard Biggs makes his guest starring shot on that episode. Okay.
Home.
Agent I Dream of Home. Why did I say Earth? Because Earth is home? I don't know. Anyway. Kate writes, all right, you ready now that we got that out of the way? "In my opinion, Dr. Franklin is too much of a control freak to let someone else collect such important data. We also saw he had a big issue with letting someone else infect a healthy person with the plague. I think it's completely feasible that he would insist on leading this mission." So I think Kate is basically putting a check mark in the not stunt casting column.
Yay, one more point for me.
Green.
Purple.
Okay, one more here. This comes to us from Mike Tuck. "You said on the most recent podcast that the Crusade episode that you talked about was the final produced episode. I hate to admit it, but I lost count of how many episodes you've discussed, and I can't remember which order you're going in for Crusade. So, is that the final Crusade episode that you guys will talk about, or are there a few more left to discuss?"
Thanks to Crusade, Other Voices, and some very, very... detailed internet archives. Remember, Google never forgets. We are discussing the unproduced Crusade scripts that we could get our hands on. Like I said, there were a couple we didn't know about that magically appeared,
yep,
like pixie dust in the Other Voices books. And then there's the ones everybody knew about. So we are going through those. I believe the last one we did was Value Judgments.
Yep. Yep. And then there's Little Bugs Have Lesser Bugs that we need to discuss. There is End of the Road.
And I think there's one more.
And then there's also a couple handful of story treatments that I think we should probably discuss as well.
Yes, we could, but those aren't actually, we didn't get a fully produced episodic script from those. They were just story ideas that were being pitched. And if I remember correctly, Little Bugs Have Lesser Bugs is the only one that would have been slated for Crusade Season 2. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. So, and then one last one here, the one last question from Mike. He writes, for summer, why have we never seen your photo on the website? Will we see a photo of you before the podcast ends?
Nope.
Well, what people have to understand is that Summer is actually a hyperdimensional entity, and the avatar represents her in a form that we humans with our limited perception can actually comprehend. Otherwise, we'd go mad with the terror of it all. So, Summer, thank you for being kind and looking out for our sanity.
Yeah, if you thought Brian Wilson's beard contained some scary shit, you ain't seen nothing yet. Have you seen that commercial?
No, I haven't.
There's a commercial. There's an ESPN commercial with Brian Wilson, relief pitcher for the San Francisco Giants, and his crazy beard. It adds another dimension to the Cthulhu legend. You have to see it. It's hilarious. Go to YouTube and look up ESPN Fear the Beard.
Fear the Beard. Okay.
It's hilarious. I cracked up when I first saw it on TV. It was awesome.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, that's it for tonight.
Wow. That went quick. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, yes. No, I am not hiding from people. Well, not bill collectors anyway. They know where I am. They just know I can't pay.
They will find you.
They just know I can't pay anything. And people recognize me at conventions by my voice, as I got ambushed at Dragon Con once just because of someone hearing me talking as I was walking towards the elevator. It was scary.
See, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway.
So you got to get a voice scrambler now.
Ooh, there you go. Where was I? Oh, yeah, website, BabylonPodcast.com. If you go there in the next couple of weeks, don't be frightened. It could be in the middle of getting an upgrade. I'm sort of in spring cleaning mode for the websites, although it's fall. BabylonPodcast.com. You want to send Tim an email or me sometimes, BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. We have forums, farpointforums.com. Is anybody over there arguing about the Crusade unproduced scripts? I haven't been over there.
Go looking over there.
Okay. No. Somebody give me a report on that. And I will be taking suggestions for the impatient viewer's guide. The shortcut, was it the Babylon 5 Impatient Viewer's Guide, I believe is what we called it, for the episodes you should watch.
Yes.
If you don't want to, quote unquote, spend a whole lot of time slogging through it all. And why wouldn't you? I mean, sit down with it, you know, get through like 12 hours a day. Come on.
Come on, people. Stop being so lazy.
No better way to spend time if you've got the flu, anyway.
Right. what else are you going to do? Clean out the garage, mow the lawn?
Exactly. So, yeah, I am going to be posting up suggestions for the Babylon 5 Impatient Viewer's Guide. And as always, if you want to call in your own voicemail, Gary, we miss you. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year Pat unleashed her memoirs on us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the Pleasure Threshold Measurer.
Da 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 da.